Oh, this is Seedlings on Thursday, January 22nd, 2009. With what I've dubbed the dueling principals, Scott Elias from Lake,
Loveland.
Loveland, Colorado, and Melinda Miller from Missouri. Springfield slash Willard. Thank you, Melinda. And, you may have already heard Melinda and Scott as the Practical Principals. They have a great podcast. They also blog, and we are going to be talking with them tonight, coming to you on the broadcast channels of worldbridges.net and edtechtalk.com. We also are in the chat at edtechtalk, and this will be a podcast by tomorrow, and you'll be able to get the chat and all the wonderful links and the wonderful audio that we hope to have for you by tomorrow. And I think I said this is Cheryl, but I'm Cheryl Oakes. I'm in Wells, Maine, and I'm going to send it to Alice, who's this webcaster tonight. Go ahead, Alice.
Hi, this is Alice Barr, and I'm in Kennebunkport, Maine, and I have experienced doubling headphones tonight, so I'm a little off kilter here. Let me send this on to Bob.
Talk about juggling. Wow. You know, I just moved over from my laptop because I had internet problems, and so now I'm on a bigger screen, and that just means more juggling. This yes. is Bob down in South Berwick, and happy to be here with the internet.
Yay. And go ahead. Go ahead. All right, and I was going to send it out west and start with Melinda. And Melinda, if you would introduce yourself and then introduce Scott, and then we'll give both of you a chance to tell a little bit about yourselves.
Well, I get to introduce Scott. He usually introduces me on our podcast, so this is going to be fun for me. I'll try to be nice.
try very hard.
I know. It'll take a lot from me. No, I am an elementary school principal in Willard, Missouri. My teachers get upset with me when I say I'm from Springfield because I actually live in Springfield, but I'm a principal in Willard, their neighboring communities, so I always have to say Willard. I actually met Scott online when I was doing my – I know that sounds kind of trashy, and it's not, but I met him online – and we were doing – when I was doing the podcasting principal, he found it somehow and listened, and we hooked up and did a podcast on – I had him as a guest on mine, and then we just decided that there isn't anything out there podcast-wise really for administrators, so we hooked up to do an administrator podcast, and we try to do it regularly as we can. But Scott is an assistant high school principal, and I'm going to let him actually tell more about himself. I don't want to steal his thunder. So, Scott, take it away.
I don't have a lot of thunder. I am a high school assistant principal at Loveland High School in Loveland, Colorado. And like Melinda said, we kind of connected, almost 2 years ago, if you can believe that. Over a mutual obsession with getting things done and the David Allen book. And I was on her podcast once, and we, I guess, kind of had a pretty good chemistry and got some great feedback, and then just decided that we would try and do it once every 2 weeks. And since then, we've been putting out the Practical Principles every 2 to 4 weeks as our lives allow. And that's pretty much where we're coming from.
Now, we've never met face-to-face, actually.
Yeah, that is kind of funny.
I know. We've met Skype-to-Skype and text-to-text, but we've talked about trying to hook up at a conference sometime, but we have not met face-to-face.
Wow. That's like many of us in the chat room. Mm-hmm. And it's always really fun to meet up with people. Mm-hmm. So that's great. I'm going to try and pull Melinda and Scott into our chat. And
I did.
Okay, so they'll be able to see where we're headed with this, all these good questions. And I'm also going to try and dump all of the links for Scott and Melinda into the chat room at this. Oh, yeah, I can't do that. So I'm going to have to put those in one by one. Well, Alice and Bob and Cheryl have all met face-to-face. Melinda and I have not met face-to-face, but we've been corresponding for about two years.
Yes.
And And Scott, I've just listened to you to your Practical Principles podcast, and I want more because I try and share that with administrators, and I just want to be able to. I think you guys should just do this full time.
Hey, I totally agree. You can go ahead and send your donations to me via PayPal, and I'd be very happy to quit my job.
I don't know. You might be part of that Obama stimulus package that we heard about today for technology. You know,
I did not see the podcasting section of that, but if it's in there, I will definitely check it out.
Okay.
At least once a week.
If it weren't for these kids we have, you know?
Yeah,
these kids just really are keeping us pretty busy. If it weren't for our own kids and our jobs, we could be principal podcasters consistently.
But, you know, I think that's really an important thing because a lot of us that you meet online do, you know, we're regular people. We have families, we have regular jobs. And then somehow, what is this kismet that, you know, makes you stay up 3 or 4 hours longer in a night to make these online connections and to plan to do a podcast when, you know, you've got little ones to put to bed or read a story to or, you know, even just sit on the couch and look at the walls?
Well, I do it so that my husband has to put the kids to bed. And it gives me a break from that. Scott, I don't know what's your reason.
No, I think my kids tend to go to bed a little bit earlier because when Melinda and I record and we were just IMing before you made the call, we were both saying, thank goodness we don't do a live podcast because what – for all of this stuff to come together is absolutely incredible that you do this regularly, because it's like, 9 o'clock at night for me, which usually means it's 10 o'clock for Melinda. But, you know, that's the best time. And, you know, that's one of the best things that I try and tell my teachers about all this technology is, you know, it works when it works for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we started doing podcasts ourselves and there's something really liberating when you go live. You know, there, Bob, you don't have as much editing to do, right?
Right. I hate editing. So.
Oh, yeah. We totally don't do that.
If we already made the mistake live, there's no sense in editing
right.
it out.
Right.
Yeah, we don't edit. Scott is I just show up and Scott does all the hard work. So if he edits, then I'm happy that he does. I hope he does. But we don't edit ours either.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to ask a question and then I'm going to start putting some of your links into the chat room while you're doing the talking. But we'll take turns. I'll keep score here. And Scott, you're going to go first to answer this question.
Sweet.
And the first question is, as a teacher in the classroom, what kinds of technology did you use with your students or parents?
This is a great question, and I've been contemplating all day because I had a feeling this one was coming. What I was going to say is, could I lie and say that I was Mr. Technology in the classroom? I think that I was a very traditional math teacher and physics teacher in a lot of ways, although when I started teaching, it was the early 90s, I was like the only teacher in the school that had my own class web page. So that was really how I got started. I had if you remember GeoCities,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I, I had a GeoCities account, and I hand-coded all of that HTML. And, you know, I put my students' grades out there. I meticulously copied the tables out of Excel and put them in there. I mean, I was Mr. Technology in the 90s. You know, and I had, you know, AOL instant message conversations when that was the thing to do with students on occasion about homework questions. And as I progressed in the classroom, I started to bring in, I was a math teacher, so there was a lot to do with Geometer Sketchpad. And then when I started teaching statistics, we did a lot with Minitab. But I really didn't get as connected with the technology until I actually left teaching and then came back. And that was when I had the opportunity to work in the private sector and really get kind of my head around some of the technology that's out there. And when I came back, I said, now, how can we not be doing this in the classroom?
Can you give us an example of one technology that you used outside of education that you said you had to bring back?
Yeah, it's one that I'm still actually trying to bring back. When I was out of the classroom, I was a data analyst for a Big Five accounting firm. We used to pull down, you know, millions and millions of lines of data out of a mainframe. And I was pretty good at hand coding SQL, and I learned to program in SAS to do data analysis. And when I came back into education, you know, we were always talking about data-driven instruction and data-driven this. And I'm like, well, somebody just get me a copy of SAS, and I can slice and dice this any way possible. I know that's not... You know, that's not really a hands-on thing that every teacher or every person would be interested in doing, but it was my background and my experience. And to get any kind of usable data, it was like, fill out this form, sign your life away because you have confidential student data. And that, to me, is one of the frustrations. I want to do the data analysis. I want to be able to provide meaningful data to teachers, but I don't feel like a lot of times we have the tools to do that.
Yeah, and I agree that... That could be a whole conversation that we could get into, but that's really interesting. We might come back to that. Melinda, how about you? Same question. Want me to repeat it?
No, I it's about using technology as a teacher, and I'm like Scott. It's funny that he says GeoCities, because I think every time we podcast, we learn something different about each other, because I have the GeoCities website as well.
What city were you in?
I don't remember that.
Oh.
So anyway, for those of you that don't know GeoCities, then you're pretty lucky. you're using something way more sophisticated than that was.
I forgot to build your own cities. That's right.
No, you built your page in a neighborhood.
Right,
yes.
Right.
5 years ago, there wasn't the web. I wasn't familiar with a web 2.0. A big thing was web questing, and I had a web quest that I would take kids to the computer lab to do on geometry and building and measuring. That was the one that came to my mind that I remember the clearest. And then Scott was one of the only ones that had a website in for my class. And then emailing parents. I started an email list, and I maybe had 5 or 6 parents on email at the time, and then I would send memos to them on email and then copy and write names of the other kids' parents on a printed version of the email. But it's amazing. I can't believe that was only 5 years ago, but then it seems like, wow, that was 5 long years ago. So that's how I used it in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, Melinda gets this one first. Question 2. Do you have an aha moment as a teacher where you decided that you had to continue using technology to reach your students?
Not so much the students was my aha moment as the parent email. We were departmentalized, so I had 3 classes rotate through my classroom, and I would send a weekly email with updates that were going on in my classroom to the ones that I had the email, and I did send a paper copy, but the parents that I actually emailed information to, if I had supplies needed on that email, like I need Cheerios, marshmallows, toothpicks, and gumdrops to do a place value hands-on lesson, then by Monday I would have enough for all three classes, and then I could put some in the workroom for the teachers to use on lessons with their kids, because people were reading their email. I don't know what happened to the paper letters, and I still don't know what happened to a lot of the paper letters I send home. But email somehow just gets read. So that was more of a with parents that I saw technology was going to boom, more so with students.
Mm-hmm. All right. Scott, want me to read the question?
Yeah, you want my aha moment?
Yes.
I had a reverse aha moment. It was in I was teaching advanced placement statistics, and after the AP exam, I had my students doing statistical projects that they had to come up and pose a question, gather the data, do some kind of analysis. And they were really good at the analysis because we'd spent a lot of time in the lab. I think we used Minitab in the computer lab. You probably mm-hmm. remember that from your either undergrad or master's degrees and want to stay far away from it. But it's a great software for running statistical analyses. And I had them do it. And then the end of the semester, after the AP exam had passed, they had to present their findings to the class. And they all wanted to use PowerPoint. And this was, oh, I would say this was maybe 1999-ish. And my reverse aha moment, I was actually floored at the fact that they had managed to craft 5 to 10 minutes of a PowerPoint presentation with absolutely no content whatsoever. They were so amazed by the bells and whistles of all the stuff they could do. There was zero meat to it at all. And it was then that I decided, kind of, you know, you can't just use the PowerPoint for all of the for all of the whiz bang features. You know, you absolutely have to get in there and teach them. If you're going to teach the use of technology, it can't just be for technology's sake. You have to mm-hmm. teach them how to intelligently design their presentations so that, you know, it makes sense to people. And that's kind of been a passion of mine ever since.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think that's true. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got this echo in my head. I have voices. No, it's interesting because I think that presentation piece has come out a great deal in the last couple of years as a skill that everyone from teachers, administrators, and students need to have, the ability to be able to convince an audience, I guess.
Hmm. And the whole media literacy that's come about, you know, probably as a result of this or as a result of people saying, well, why are we doing a video or why are we doing a PowerPoint, you know?
Hey, I was going to say that Sherry's class, if they're in here, they're so lucky in a grad class that they're getting to do something like this and not 4,000 PowerPoint presentations right now. I'm sorry, Sherry, if you're doing PowerPoint presentations, but I could not do – that was one of the – it just drove me crazy. It was just like all we did was PowerPoint presentations for a long period of my graduate classes. But anyway, so they're very lucky to have this learning opportunity.
Yeah, and I don't see them right this minute, but Sherry Toledo actually 2 years ago gave her students a chance to take a final exam or to come in and participate online and in the chat room as part of their final exam. I mean, as their final exam. So she's really a pioneer in graduate education.
Yes, she is.
PowerPoint really has gotten a bad rap lately, and I'll bet – you know, way back in history, people said the same thing about, you know, we're so tired of seeing cave drawings. You know, let's move on to something. But, you know, future generations will find these PowerPoints and be amazed.
but it won't be compatible with whatever Microsoft product is out at the time. So it'll be
oh, that's great. Alice, they say they're hearing you twice, but I only hear you once.
Oh, I hear me twice.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Peggy's pulling your leg. All right. Next question. And Scott goes first on this one. Oh, is that the – oh, all right. So I asked you the aha moment about as a teacher and working with students. And now do you have an aha moment as an administrator where you decided that it was important that you were going to continue encouraging your your people, your staff, your parents and students to continue on this journey?
I guess it would be one of those moments where just when you think you're you know, you're banging your head against the wall and nobody's listening to you about how great this stuff is. And, you know, if they'd only listen to you, it would change their lives. I had the last school that I was at had put together a kind of an informal, we called it like the lunch bunch that, you know, I had a group of young teachers and they wanted to know how I, you know, created the PowerPoints that I did or the keynotes. Sorry, we didn't use PowerPoint. The slides that I did and you know, just they heard me talk about some of this technology and they wanted to know about it. And so we kind of created this real informal lunch bunch and it started with three or four people. And of course, you always had the person who would come in and say, well, you know, as soon as our district buys me more stuff, then I'll use technology. And I just, you know, if that's what you're waiting for, then, you know, you're probably in the wrong profession because we're always going to be a couple of years behind with some of this stuff. But I think the real aha moment for me was getting a couple of my language arts teachers to start a blog for their class. And they had never heard of a blog. They didn't know what a blog was. And this was only 3 years ago. They had never thought of doing anything like that. And so a couple of them just tried it just for the heck of it and put a poem out there and asked some students to comment. And the moment for me was when one of the teachers came down to my office and said, I cannot believe a student came to me and asked me when we were going to do that again. I said, well, why did that surprise you? And she said, well, never in 20 years of teaching have I had a student come up to me and say, please, can I have more homework? Because they didn't think about it as homework. This was what the kids did when they went home. And just that kind of a connection and being able to support teachers as they improve, you know, their skills and building their own networks and using some of these tools was such a moment for me that to get a teacher to see that students weren't seeing this as work was a really big moment for me.
That's great. Any comments for Scott about that before we get Melinda?
Well, I wonder if, you know, they were seeing it more as their own work now that they controlled it on their blog and could, you know, point people to it rather than the old way of writing for that one teacher.
You know, yeah, I, you know, I think that was a big...
I think they do like work, but here's a meaningful work, you know?
Right, and I think when we extended that conversation a little bit further, well, why do you think that they would rather respond to a blog post than to, you know, write an essay? And I think we, you know, started to kind of bring the conversation back to, well, this was out there, you know? Someone more than just the teacher was going to read this. So they really had that mentality that, you know, I better put some quality work out there because it's going to more than just my teacher. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, and this was 3 years ago, so we weren't Twittering. We weren't, you know, all that stuff was still really – blogging was it. That was the thing. And so I think that they realized that, wow, if I get my students publishing and I get my students creating and with another audience in mind, that, you know, good things happen.
I think, you know, what Bob was saying, too, is that it's their own creation. I think when you give students an opportunity to publish, because I think somehow I differentiate publishing, which is in that online environment, versus, you know, writing for the refrigerator. But I think when you give students an opportunity to do that, they want to edit, they want to make it better, they want to, you know, just like you said, have somebody in the world read it. So I see that as a huge difference that really is what engages them.
Well, definitely creating with the idea of an audience in mind, making something with the idea that someone else is going to read it. It's not just going up, like you said, on the fridge. It's not just going to be my teacher's going to give it a star and hang it on the wall, that this is going to be out there. So, yeah, the whole idea of making something that other people are going to consume.
That's the prosumer, right? Producer. And it's nice.
And, you know, I'm thinking, too, that even just having that little niche of that's where my writing lives probably has an effect as well. You know, not only are other people being able to see it, but that student can return to it whenever instead of writing the piece. And it immediately, I saw it happen today, is taken away from the student and it's gone. They can't really look at it or hold it or anything. So having their own little blog piece is like having their own little city, like GeoCities, I guess.
I'm still trying to remember what city I was in. It's coming for the rest of the show.
All right. I think on my scorecard, it's Melinda's turn. Aha moment as an administrator where you decided it was an important thing. And you've blogged about this. And so I'm anxious to hear what you're going to share.
Well, I don't really know what I blogged about. I can't keep up. I mean, I don't remember which one you're talking about. But the thing that I was thinking about on this question was my aha moments, I think, are seeing kids today in their personal and their social lives and how much they depend on technology tools. And when the jobs that are going away right now come back, I don't know that it's going to be the same jobs. I think the jobs that are going to be coming back from this time is going to be I can't multitask, and windows keep popping up all over the place, and so people may think I'm tech savvy from my podcast, but I'm freaking out with all the windows that are popping up right now. And I mean, these kids live for their phones, MySpace, Facebook, instant messaging, video games. I was driving by a high school over by the doctor's office where I take my kids to the doctor when school let out, and I was afraid for my life because all the kids walking were texting and all the kids driving were texting. And I just thought, this is what these kids are doing and relating to that we as adults and parents don't realize. I got into Facebook, and I put that on my blog, but I started Facebook as a competition between my brothers to see who could have the most friends, which that's not the purpose of Facebook, but when you have two brothers, that's competition.
Wait a minute, that's not the purpose of Facebook? I'm closing my account.
So I got on there, and so a girl across the street just graduated high school. And I'm like, oh, please friend me. I want to, I have to beat my brother. And so she friends me, and I see that she's got 400 friends. Mm-hmm. And then I have a friend from home. One of my really good friend's daughter is in high school. And I said something about Facebook, and she looked at me like, oh, my word, you're on Facebook. That's scary. And so I said, oh, please friend me, or if I friend you, don't, not friend me back or whatever. I mean, it's so junior high. But I said, she friended me, and she had like 260 friends. This is what the kids are doing. If you don't know about this stuff, or you're not finding out about this stuff, then these kids are living separate lives, some of them, than what parents realize. So the aha moment to me is that this is how we connect with our kids, and this is how we, are going to reach them, not my archaic web quest that I created 10 years ago. So, I don't know if that really answered your question, but that's what I see.
Yep. Yeah, it did. It did. Bob or Alice, want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree with all that. I'm thinking of a movie that I just told you, Cheryl, about that, like you just said, Belinda, if you're not doing this, you really don't know what world they live in. And I think even when we join them, we're still seeing it through our eyes. You're probably noticing everybody texting in their cars and they're not, but I just saw this movie called American Teen, and really you get to travel behind the scenes with, I think it's like five kids from that are in senior year, and just watching some of the technology uses, you really see it. Like, you really see somebody break up with his girlfriend over text messaging.
It's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy. My neighbor girl I was talking about that lives across the street, her cell phone is an appendage, and it's not even it. She doesn't even consider it rude at all to just have that out all the time. It's not like a disrespect thing. It's just an appendage. I can talk to you and be over here and be on my cell phone at the same time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think it's rude either, because I'm just used to her doing that. Mm-hmm. But that's just how kids are. That's just what they're doing.
My favorite quote from some seniors who were in graduation last June, I was taking pictures as they were walking out, and you know, the girl got past the stands, and she pulled her phone from under her gown, and she said, "Oh my God, my text messages are all full." And that was only in 1 hour of, or an hour and a half for the ceremony. But
she wasn't texting during graduation.
No, no. I mean, two things amaze me. That number one, she had it, but it was put away. And number two, that she filled up her text messages in an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow. She must be on the limited plan.
Well, could be.
I don't think any parent of an adolescent could put their child on anything but an unlimited texting plan. You don't have to have any voice minutes at all. You don't need any voice.
Yes,
just
that's
the
text.
Right.
Yep.
That's true. I actually did the little girl across the street. I actually saw her talking on her phone, like holding it to her ear for the first time last night. And I've known her for like 2 years.
That was her. Now. Those were her parents she was speaking to.
Yeah. I do have to tell you a funny story about my secretary and her husband and text messaging, because that's the way they are connecting with their grandkids today. They both got cell phones so that they could connect with their grandkids. And my secretary's husband was sitting out in the outer office texting his granddaughter, and he couldn't text fast enough. So he called her on the phone, and she didn't answer. And so right after he hung up, she texted him back, "Did you just call me?" In her hands. And so she texts back, "I'm on the bus. I'm not supposed to be on my cell phone." So they have their phones. It's just they're good at, you know, keeping them. But my PTO is actually buying into technology a little bit better. I'm trying to point out the importance of technology, because sometimes we get caught up in having so much playground equipment that our playground becomes an amusement park. And so I've had to shift that thinking to, wouldn't technology be another way we could be spending our money? We have, you know, the amusement park out on the playground. Now we have plenty of equipment. Can we now spend our money on some technology advancements that the school doesn't have the money to pay right now? So I mean, my PTO is really buying into the technology piece. And that came a lot from when we put smart boards in all of our third grade classrooms, and they saw the smart boards in interaction. It was just, I mean, they really bought into it at that time. So, sorry.
Oh, that was my next question. Do you have a favorite story to share about your school district, parents, staff, students, or your own family? So Melinda went first on that one, Scott.
Can I add on to that question?
Sure, yeah.
What effect has your podcasting had on your schools or your teachers bringing in technology or integrating?
Are you asking me?
Both of you.
Okay. I don't think any – I think maybe two of my teachers even know that I do anything besides suspend kids. It's not something that I and that's not true, and I'll give you the rest of my story in a minute, but I'm being facetious.
No.
It's not – not me. It's not something that I really – you know, it's not something that I hide. It's just not something that comes up. You know, our podcast is really geared more for administrators. I've shared it when I've spoken to aspiring administrators at CSU, when I've talked to them. But it just, you know, I'm not hiding it. I had our district communications person found my podcast and blog and told me how awesome, you know, it is that we do that. And it's just not something that has really come up. I have two that have discovered it and have said, "Wow, that's really cool," and I have responded. And but it's not really something that I make a big deal about at work. Mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed. It just hasn't come up.
Yep.
Melinda's, I know some of Melinda's teachers know and listen.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good or bad, especially when Scott and I talk late at night when we're both tired. And but no,
especially especially the infamous glass of ice water episode.
Yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. It was tea. No, my teachers have know I have my blog, my principal, WE principal blog, and they read that, of course. Some of them, I think I posted about a special treat that I was giving them
the day,
the day after Christmas break. I was putting together little letters, Happy New Year's letters, and going to put a treat on their desk so when they came back to school, they would have a treat on their desk. And one of my teachers, it comes up in her reader. So she read it before I even had the opportunity. So I had to comment back to her not to tell anyone. I mean, and they know I'm just kidding. But my teachers know that I have the podcast with Scott. And some of them know about my blog. Some of them read it. Some of them don't. But I try to just make it fun and helpful. I think sometimes they have forgotten about my blog and my, well, everybody probably forgot about my blog when I had Cassidy because I took a hiatus from life in general. But my teachers enjoy it and I think modeling it has helped. I try to model it as much as I can. So modeling a podcast, modeling a blog, modeling SlideShare, modeling VoiceThread, modeling Google Documents. Maybe tried all of those things yet, but the more I do it, eventually maybe they will buy into some of those things. And they are a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, we all hear that the principal is the leader in that building, leaders, you know, for curriculum, leader for technology. And I think that's, you know, more power to you that you demonstrate all those tools that you've used and really tried to put them in context for people. Scott's got to answer the question.
Wait a minute, I'm behind. I'm sorry, I was texting. What?
Oh no, I think I got.
Oh, you want me to share? You wanted me to share a story?
Your favorite story. Your favorite story. Yeah, and then we have tons of questions from the chat.
Okay, favorite story. Oh, I hope my district. So I hope my district directors. It's actually it may be only funny to me and other geeky people, but that's okay because that's who's listening.
That's right.
This fall, we got a new superintendent this year, and you know we always have our big welcome back administrator retreat for a day or two, where you know pretty much everybody, you know, district and school leadership all go for the day or 2 days. And, you know, they sit and hear the vision and mission and get together and talk about what's going to be wonderful this year. And this summer, all of the district level leadership, I don't know, they must be running a closeout deal at Verizon or something because they all got Blackberries. And you're talking about, I love our district leadership, but you're talking about people that have graduated now from like the free phone that you get for signing up to a BlackBerry, you know, and I'm sitting there, you know, I'm a relatively young guy and I'm into all this stuff. And I'm sitting there at the district meeting for the first day, you know, and I'm very conscientious about taking out my iPhone and geeking around with it while I'm supposed to be paying attention. And I am sitting there at this retreat, the first day that the new superintendent is laying out his vision for the district. And I am looking around and every director in the district has their head buried in their BlackBerry. And they're thumbing around on these things all day, and I am cracking up because it looks like the hallways in my high school. We get up to walk around on break, and these people with PhDs that are making three times what I'm making are walking around the administrative offices banging their heads against each other because they're not looking where they're going. And I didn't have anyone to share it with because no one really got it. Like I got it. I have one other AP in my building who's a little older than I am, and he's into the text messaging. And he and I were just sitting there, and we're like, okay, look, Dr. So-and-so is getting up and walking over there. And they're like walking into the walls.
Okay, my superintendent got an iPhone, and I thought, wow, cutting edge, but he doesn't want to be able to get his email or text. He just wants to use a phone and check the weather.
So?
I'm like going, are you kidding me? So then I show him some of my ridiculous gaming and applications that are inappropriate for about every occasion. And I'm like, do you not have all this stuff on there, at least just for fun?
Where's your lighter?
I don't know. I don't know what they were actually even doing. You know, I wanted to ask them.
They don't either.
I asked one of them. I said, hey, what are you doing on there? Oh, I'm emailing Lynn. I said, Lynn is sitting right over there. Well, yeah, but she's across the room. I said, what was I thinking? I don't know.
I had a student come up to me today and say, Mr. S, I just got an iPod Touch. And I said, great, we should talk sometime. Yeah, how do you get that lighter thing? I'm thinking, I never showed that. I never, you know. How does he know I have it?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. Yes, yes. All right. I have a couple of questions from the chat room. I have a question about Blogging Buddies. Have either of you heard of Blogging Buddies, elementary students and college students blogging together? Apparently, Kathy Cassidy, way, way, way back at the beginning of the chat, may have been involved in that project. So have you heard that?
No, I have not.
Okay, so maybe we'll have, I'm sure the link got put in there, but we'll double check.
Kathy, but I have not heard of that.
Well, then check back with Kathy about it. How about, are any of your teachers on Twitter?
I have two.
I don't know. I have
maybe four now. I did a workshop on Friday where we talked about social networking, just a very, very general overview. And, you know, I think your two things that you're worried about when you do a presentation are that no one will show up or that you will pack the room. And we had standing room only with teachers in the hallway because they were so curious about Facebook and Twitter and Delicious and just all of these social networking tools. So I got two more signed up on Friday. They hadn't done a whole lot with it, but I try and at them every once in a while and encourage them to post something.
Mm-hmm. And Scott, what did you show them about Facebook?
I think everybody's heard the negative stereotypes about it. And I wanted to show them, hey, look, there's a way that you can use this with your students that is A, appropriate, mm-hmm. and B, productive. You know, we have Moodle in my building, but this may be sacrilegious. I'm not 100% sold on Moodle as the be-all, end-all platform for instructional delivery. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It does what it's supposed to do. But my kids are on Facebook. Yeah. So as an experiment, I created a Facebook group for I teach one class every other day mm-hmm. as a favor to the math department because we were a little low to eat. I said, can't you just put everything on Facebook? I made a Facebook group for my class. And yeah. That has been like one of the best things I've ever done. They're constantly on there. When's the test? How do you do this? Can you, you know, am I on the right track with this problem? And it's easy for me to check on my phone and say, yep, looks good. And now they don't have to wait for the next day. We can do it. You know, it can be right then there. So I spent some time with teachers saying, look, yeah, you read the media about the third grade teacher who is a bikini model in Florida and got fired because she had some bikini pictures on Facebook. Okay, let me show you how to set it up so you can segregate your kids into their own special, it's not called a group, it's called a list. You can segregate a list of students, and then you can exclude them from everything you don't want them to see. So I said, look at that. Okay, now I can log in as a student, and look, I don't see anything. I don't see my wall. I don't see my pictures. Not that I have anything to hide, but my concern is my friends that don't work in education.
Right.
You know, we'll post something on my wall about how it's really cool that I live next to the new Belgium brewery in Fort Collins. And my kids don't need to see that.
Yeah.
So just showing them that there is a way to do it effectively without giving them the keys to the kingdom was a real eye opener. And I helped probably five or six teachers set up their account because they had been ignoring students who wanted to friend them.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I'm going to have to find out about that, that list, because I'm in my high school group, you know, and that's the way that I connect with students because I don't have their email addresses. So when I want to get a message out, I just put it, you know, out there in that the high school group, and they see it, and if they want to, you know, participate, then they do. That's awesome. All right, I have from Sheila, what are the top two tools you would recommend for principals?
That's a good question.
That's a great question.
I gave mine in the chat, but Melinda, do you want to give yours? They might be similar.
Well,
they
the
could
iPhone
be our
definitely.
Guest geek of the week.
As
I'm looking at the clock.
Yep.
The iPhone, definitely, and then Google Docs. And I've seen a little bit of comments in the chat about Google Docs, but I finally have my admin team hooked on Google Documents, I think. We use those for committee meetings, for our administrator meetings, for our elementary principals meetings, for presentations, the Google presentation part of it. We've been using that this year pretty significantly. I mean, I'm starting to see them all and hearing things from their buildings that they're using Google Docs for certain things. So that has been hugely beneficial. They did share something of mine with their teachers to collaborate on, and I had to teach them how to just let the teachers be a viewer. I didn't want their input on that document. I just wanted them to see it. So, but iPhone, Google Docs.
Thanks.
Okay, I'll say iPhone. And I haven't gotten to the level of Google Docs integration with everybody that I would like to yet. They just haven't realized how powerful it is, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Mine was the iPhone and Remember the Milk, which is my indispensable task management application.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Those are great.
I'll put a link to it out so you can put it. Do you want me to put it in the Google document so you can put it out there, or should I put it in the chat?
If you want to put it right in the chat, because we publish the chat and we put the links into our Delicious account. So
very good.
Hey, welcome to Deb Barrows. Bob kind of gave us the foreshadowing of what's to come. It's that time in the show, but I had one more question. Can I meld everything into one more question? Sure, I'm the hostess tonight.
So, you can do it, whatever you want.
This has like become a standard question because it just makes all of us think about where Melinda Scott goes first on this. Question five, where were you a year ago? Where are you now? And what makes the difference about how you get to where you were? What makes the differences? It doesn't make sense, but where were you a year ago? And where are you now? And how has that transpired?
Melinda's first, right?
No, you are.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry.
I think you want me to go first.
Go ahead. Ladies first.
Okay.
I'll give you time to think about that one. A year ago, I was pregnant, and I was a very mean principal. I can say that honestly, and they would agree with that, and that's okay. And actually, I think a year ago, I was participating in EduCon online, which starts tomorrow, I think.
Yes.
And so I was exploring Twitter. I wasn't really using it. Now I use it all the time. I had signed up for Facebook, but I never did anything with it. And now I'm active in Twitter and in Facebook. Where am I now? I'm desperately attached to my technology tools. What makes the difference?
Yeah.
Not being pregnant. So
you heard it first.
Yes.
Oh,
that's great, because that's exactly the essence of what we try to get at. You know, where were you a year ago? And, like, holy mackerel, look at this new world on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all those new connections.
Okay, Scott.
A year ago, I was just starting to convince Melinda that she had to get a Mac. Now she has a Mac.
Yes.
So thank you and good night. So I would say... I would say pretty similar to Melinda. I mean, a year ago, this was cool stuff that I played with and, you know, met some like-minded educators and other people. But I think now I'm starting to, okay, this is really good, but now I'm starting to ask the hard questions about, aside from being really cool and really fun, how can this stuff be folded into, first of all, both the 21st century learning push that we're seeing right now, as well as getting kids ready for, you know, teaching the curriculum that we have to teach to get them to pass the state test. So, you know, we're kind of always in this conundrum of, well, we're supposed to teach 21st century skills, but that doesn't, you know, teaching that, you can't teach them what you're supposed to teach them for the state test. And so we're constantly caught in the middle. And so now I find myself thinking a lot about how these two things are going to come together and how all the stuff that to me was really cool and fun a year ago is really, really powerful and useful now in an educational setting. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Great. Yes. That's perfect. I mean, and that's what we strive for. We, you know, try out new things and try to find the purpose for it. So excellent. Well, now that I'm looking at the document, the Google Docs where we share our agenda, Melinda's already given her Geek of the Week, her iPhone and Google Docs, and Scott's given his Geek of the Week, iPhone and Remember the Milk. So we're on to Alice.
Okay.
Want me to put your geek in the
please
chat? Okay, I'll do that.
My Geek of the Week comes from Andy Carvin's blog, and it's a gigapixel view of the inauguration. And if you have a chance, I think the most amazing thing about it is the ability and how far you can zoom in. It's kind of a geeky Geek of the Week, but I think it would be fascinating for your kids to take a look at. It's absolutely amazing, the quality and how far away the picture was taken and how far you can zoom in.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that something?
Wow.
Apparently, it sucks up your bandwidth, too.
No, I did it at school. It takes a few minutes to load in, but once it's loaded in, it's really, you just scroll around and zoom in and out.
Oh, my gosh.
That's incredible.
All right, here I don't dare play with that right now.
Yeah, as soon as I clicked on it, I started to lose my Skype, so.
Yeah.
So that's my Geek of the Week. And also the blog, the blog post of how he did it, the photographer.
Nice. Bob, are you ready?
I'm so sorry. I'm lost in this. I didn't realize you could even see Barack. It's like 360. So I was looking out at the crowd. I'm like, wow. Hey, there's some people asleep behind him.
Hey, leave Al Gore out of this.
All right. I got this today, though I think I got it really late because it goes to one of my accounts that I rarely check. But, I think I lost it, too. From VoiceThread. VoiceThread sent this out. And I guess Bill Ferriter of the Tempered Radical blog started this VoiceThread in the author of Read Aside, which is a book coming out. Subtitle is How Schools Are Killing Reading and What You Can Do About It. And it's just great. I mean, there's just such a great conversation going on there. It's closed now. I think this morning was the last moment you could add to the conversation. But, you know, I'm about halfway through it, and I'm loving the conversation. So I got the link for the book, the blog, and the voice thread all in the link of the week. I'll try to get them into the chat right now. So thanks to VoiceThread for that.
Nice. I got
Alice's GigaPan in there. Oh, Bob's got his. All right. And so my geek of the week is Animoto.com. They've gone through a few changes. If you were an Animoto subscriber about 6 months ago, even, you may have missed that they have an Animoto education account. And your education account lasts for approximately 6 months, and then you reapply for it. But with your education account and with Gmail, your Gmail and adding students to it, they can have their own sub-account under your account. And I did a project with a middle school 8th grade art teacher, and his students were doing self-portraits in iMovie. They saved them as JPEGs. We posted them at Animoto. And then Animoto is great because it has an automatic feed if you set up an account at YouTube. And at our school, YouTube is open. So those kids were thrilled at the process that they were able to finish. And the other one, and this was kind of in honor of Scott tonight. I just got an email yesterday about post secondary connect, making connections between high school and college success. And so it's the HTTP www.postsecconnect.com. And it just is a place that's starting conversations, building a bridge between K-12 education and secondary education. So really important stuff is in light of all the high school dropouts that we're experiencing right now. And yes, Peggy, Animoto on the iPhone. That's great. That is great.
Wait, and Ustream just came out for the iPhone. Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, Kathy Walensky's want to jump in here to the Geek of the Week. It's a quick plug for Maria Nee's 100th Day Wiki. If anyone's interested, she's got that posted a link right here for 100thday.wetpaint.com. So good stuff. Good stuff. And Melinda had one more Geek of the Week, a shout out for Educon, educon21.wikispaces.com. And
yeah,
that's happening.
Yeah, I was actually going to post to my principal blog about that and watching that, because I think you can watch that online almost all weekend. But they're using, I don't know how to pronounce it, Mogulus instead of Ustream this year.
Oh. I did see something about that somewhere, yes.
They have on the wiki, they have the Educon, it says Educon TV or something. So I think that once they are live, then you can access it or go click on the link, I'm guessing. I'm just not familiar with it. I'm hoping that once they go live, you can just click on the link and watch or be a part of it. They said Ustream, Chris Lehman replied to one of my Twitters about their Ustream, their district doesn't like Ustream because of the chat feature. So I don't know if Mogulus must not have a chat feature. I'm not sure.
Ah, got it. Wow.
But that's
get everybody
tomorrow,
hooked up.
Not.
Then they have to go move in the cheese.
Yes. Yes, but we keep searching for that purpose, you know, and if the purpose didn't work with the chat and, you know, you found something new, then more power to you for, you know, continuing with that. Wow. If you haven't noticed, we are coming up on the last couple minutes of our hour here. And I just want to thank Scott, Elias, and Melinda Miller for being the dueling principals tonight and sharing this this great conversation.
Yeah. Na, 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 na.
No, thanks. It was fun. I mean, I always listen to Cheryl when she was on Women of the Web, and so I've just been converting over to Seedlings and trying to listen to both of them. I'm not able to listen to as many podcasts as I used to because now my daughter wants to sing Miley Cyrus in the car, so I'm sorry, but Miley Cyrus is taking
Seedlings. Miley Seedlings.
Well, you get the best of both worlds.
Nice. Everyone makes mistakes. I'm sorry, I could not help it. Scott, you obviously don't listen to Miley Cyrus anymore.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that. My son spoke with an Australian accent for the first 6 months that he talked because he watched The Wiggles.
That's great. Well, Scott, thanks so much. It's been great to talk to you and get to know you a little bit more and not just be listening to you and Melinda having your conversation, but actually participating in it. It's been wonderful.
Well, Cheryl, it was absolutely my pleasure, and I had a lot of fun. This is a great group, and I look forward to maybe connecting again sometime.
Would love to. We would love to. Bob, Alice, want to weigh in?
No, thank you so much. It was great. Absolutely great to have you guys.
We always have to say thanks to the chat room for making this a great show. And too, thank you for worldbridges.net and edtechtalk.com, Dave Cormier and Jeff Lebo for providing this wonderful platform for us to have a voice. So this is one great. Oh, yeah. Shout out to the peeps. Oh, all right. So we are going to sign off in the webcast. And Scott and Melinda, if you want to just stick around for a minute, we'll say bye-bye to you, and then we'll be on our way. So thanks, everybody out there in webcast land.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Scott, you just put in there that you're presenting at Colorado Learning. Did you get accepted?
I found out this morning, yeah. My proposal was accepted.
Oh, congratulations. Yay.
Yeah, hey, it's only like a 12-hour drive from Missouri.
Yeah.
There you go, Melinda.
Actually, I think it's going to be Ustreamed. I'm not sure. But now I'm nervous because now I actually have to make some stuff up to talk about.
I was going to say.
All right, hold on, you guys. Let me just stop the broadcast and hang on a second.
Yep.